Chapter 17, Building Community. I'd rather go to hell with my friends than heaven alone. In a recent show, I described how much I miss socializing now that I'm retired and don't have a regular place to go every day.
When I was working at Power Speaking, for many years, that was my social group. You know, we'd go out to drinks, we'd have dinner, we'd talk. You know, so it was the clients, the board, our trainers, everybody. We just knew each other. It was my group. And since I've been retired for 5 years, I don't have that anymore. And I miss it because I'm sitting at home and I'm reading the newspaper and it's 11 o'clock and the phone hasn't rung and there's no emails coming my way. And I say, oh, damn. In fact, I even start to look forward to emails, even advertisements, you know. Gets kind of excited. Oh, look, here's an email, you know. And I got one last week. I'm really so excited about this one. This came from Nigeria. It was a prince. It was a prince in Nigeria, and he said he had $10 million that the government wouldn't let him get out of Nigeria unless they had somebody in the United States to receive the money. So would I be willing to? I said, well, sure, of course. So he said, the money will be put in your bank account. So what I need from you is your bank data, your social security number, and all your credit cards. I said, well, of course, you know. Now, he said, keep watching, you know, your bank statement, and it'll show up.
Actually, lack of community, especially among seniors, can have serious health consequences. According to a recent CDC report, loneliness can increase risk of stroke, risk of dementia, and risk of heart disease. This is where building community comes in. We're social animals. We need other people. Sometimes this comes naturally from work.
Here are five examples of people who've built communities at work.
Ginger Graham explains that in her busy life as a CEO, she must develop and maintain a community to help her run her family and her business obligations.
There's no doubt there's trade-offs for every pursuit. And the trade-off to lead an organization is a great personal trade of time. You lose control because your employees, your customers, your constituents have a lot more say over how you spend your time. So the number one advice I give young women who want to lead organizations is pick your right partner. Make sure that you marry a man who loves your capabilities and your potential and is willing to support that and is a partnership in your relationship. And if it includes family care and children and the running of the household and the life, that there's a partner in that with you. Because if there's someone at home, and it's for men and women, if there's someone at home that every time you work late says, what are you doing there? You know, why weren't you home early? That is not something that you can sustain a very pressing, growing career and that kind of pressure at home. So pick a good partner who's in it to make sure you exercise your full potential. And then make trade-offs. And that means letting go of a lot of things. For many women, I say hire a housekeeper and get over it because we want to control all aspects of our life. Build friends and circles so that you have people who help you. And if you have children, that you have carpools and buddies. And if you do miss a flight and you don't get home in time, you've got a good girlfriend you can call and she'll always pick up your kids from school. And remember, you're not in it alone. You're not carrying the world by yourself. You have a partner, you have family, you have friends, you have neighbors, you have business colleagues, and it is a family if you really are in your work for the long term. So use that family and don't be afraid to ask for help. Not all of us are good at asking for help.
For iron workers, building and relying on your community when you're 10 stories up in the air and trying to place a 2,000-pound beam, it can be a matter of life and death. Here they talk about not thinking about falling and watching out for one another and for the new man on the team. Their main goal is to get the job done and see everyone going home safely at night.
Any of you guys fallen?
Not on this side. Oh.
Nope.
That's something that we don't ever think about.
And we don't like to talk about.
Yeah, you don't
don't ever talk about.
You don't talk about it, you don't think about
that's
it.
That's why we look after everybody for that exact same reason. This is a newcomer. Something happens to him, it's our fault, not his fault. We didn't give him the right direction. This is our future here. If we don't take care of our future, we're not going to have one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We all come off from all different walks of life. But when we come together on that job site, we're all one. And the main objective is get the job done and get it done so that everybody goes home safe every night.
Terry Linkso is president of Linkso Garden Materials. She once said that running a small business allows us to put into place practices that reach way beyond the bottom line. And indeed, she and her family have done exactly that, especially by how they treat employees. Corporate cultures come from the top. Customers can feel the goodwill when they walk through the front door. This doesn't just happen. Here's how Terry describes the community at Linkso.
One thing I got interested in was just the relationship between employer and employee and how that works. If an employee has a family problem, an emergency problem, sometimes we will just gift them some funds to take care of what they need to do if they need to fly away to their family, like maybe down in...
Did you say gift?
Yes. Yeah.
So this isn't a loan?
No, sometimes we'll just give them some money because it's a dire circumstance. It's very stressful for them. So it depends upon the employee and the situation, but they're under a lot of stress. And we get to know our employees, so we know, and we'll help out. And what's interesting is they, in turn, will do the same thing with each other. They will come forward and say, if they know an employee is having a medical problem and off work for a while, they'll say, I want to donate my vacation time to this person. Or someone's parent dies and they have to go to Mexico or El Salvador or somewhere. They will come up to myself or to my sister Pam and say, let's put a collection together for this person, and the company will match whatever funds the employees gather. So, you know, it's become sort of a part of our way of doing business too in our culture here, is the people also that work here also respond in a very giving and kind way.
How often do you hear about companies where employees give each other vacation days or sick leave? Man, that's what you call community. Rene Caballero owns and operates the GVA Cafe in Morgan Hill, California. While she's the founder and owner of this unique coffee shop, she always felt that it really belongs to the whole community, including the customers and employees, not just to her.
What's been some of the most rewarding and satisfying part of all of this? Think of a time when you just said, I'm so glad I did this. Boom!
I am my own boss. I don't have to show up to work. I want to be there, and always wanting to be at GVA Cafe has been, a good thing for me.
So it's an internal motivation rather than external, having a job, somebody forcing you to be there.
Correct. Yes. An internal motivation of succeeding and doing something and making a difference. I always said the GVA Cafe was not for me. This is not for me. It was for my community. And then it was for my employees, and then it became an experience overall for anyone who visited GVA Cafe. And that inner drive to be there and give, it was my way of giving because I'm a giving person. And so it was a coffee shop, it was owning my own business, it was providing kind of like your home, opening it up to the community, it was a connection. It was, right now I realize, something that we miss, that connection, that human connection between people.
Building community. Aside from work, we can build community in our personal lives. Neighborhood groups, church groups, hobbies, reunions, the list goes on and on. My wife Mary McGlynn's family experienced a life-changing tragedy in 1954 when lightning hit their barn in rural Wisconsin. The resulting fire totally destroyed their barn and their farming equipment and killed all their cattle. It essentially wiped out their livelihood as dairy farmers. In a recent speech, Mary describes how what happened next created her lifelong appreciation for the power of community.
It truly was a dark and stormy night in 1954. When a fierce lightning storm hit our barn in rural Wisconsin and was destroyed. The barn burst into flame. It was raging inferno. By the time my mother woke up, the sky was a blazing orange. The volunteer firefighters were called, but to no avail. Of course, over the course of the night, all of the cows died in their stanchions. The farming equipment was destroyed, and my parents lost their livelihood. But that's not the end of the story, but the beginning of a glorious life lesson. The next morning, the neighbors arrived with a bulldozer to dig a huge hole so that the cows could be buried. The meal showed up to feed our family. And in the latter part of the spring of that year, the village gentleman came, set up a sawmill, cut the lumber from our woods, planed it, and that was what was going to be the barn of today. We survived because of community. It's plain and simple, community. And I am partially formed by that experience. I have never lost the sight of the goodness and the generosity and the kindness of people. And I've learned that you can create community everywhere you go. So with that experience embedded in my DNA, it is not hard to transfer how I might lead a company. In everything I do, it's all about connections and community.
Humans have a need for community. Church, book club, bowling club, whatever. But in big cities and interpersonal suburbs, in recent decades, we live more isolated lives. Our children may grow up and move away. Some of us live in gated communities. A group of friends from Berkeley High, the class of 1957, plus a few others, have started having weekly Zoom meetings. There's an openness and a sharing that surprised all of us. Many of us didn't know each other in high school, or at best, we knew who the others were, but only from a distance. Social cliques, economics, racial barriers, all of this kept us from knowing each other. And then pile on top of that, adolescent insecurities, and there were a lot of barriers to keep us from knowing people who are different than ourselves. Our class has been fortunate to have a strong reunion committee. We've managed to stay in touch. Things are pressing in on us, though. Retirement, health issues, turning 80 years old. Then along came Zoom. We've started having weekly meetings. First an hour, then 90 minutes, and now sometimes up to 2 hours. Apparently, we really want to hear each other's stories. I've been thrilled to see how trusting and open we are being with each other. So I ask people to share what they get out of these meetings. Here are some of the excerpts. Jim Hunol: our Zoom adventures are like a miracle happening in real time, a precious window into the past, a time now forever gone, like visiting a previous life and revisiting friends you once were young with. Larry Beret: it's as if I have followed Alice down the rabbit hole to get to know the people I didn't know in high school and came back out knowing them all my life. It is a spiritual experience. Jim Fleming: the common thread is that we each thought we were the only ones with growing pains. Brenda Lee Wong: each of us is different in so many ways. It seems like our differences are what is bringing us closer together. Liz Hargrove: we weren't encouraged to speak our truth. I didn't even know my truth. I was shy and had low self-esteem. We can grow and change at any time in our lives, even in our 80s. Warren Harnden: in my angry state of mind from 13 to 18, I had little interaction with most of my classmates. Now I appreciate how much good stuff I missed as we share and listen to other classmates' stories. I'm very grateful for all of that. Mariana Cheng Ham. At Berkeley High, we were like caterpillars waiting to become butterflies, the hard exoskeleton protecting the developing butterfly beneath. How gratifying these meetings are. For now, we get to see the size, shape, and color of the butterflies that emerged. Finally, I'll summarize with Azeel Bennett. She said in a couple of sentences what everybody else was saying in one way or another. After being out of touch with my classmates for 60 years, I listened and heard them share their most personal life experiences. Afterwards, I said to myself, "Ha! I'm not so unusual after all." All of this reminds me of a quote about friendship from C.S. Lewis. "What? You too? I thought I was the only one." Another of my favorite community groups is my neighborhood on Harrison Avenue in Redwood City. We get together usually once a year for a block party during the summer, sometimes even more often than that. Neighbors are eager to get to know each other. The first one was 6 years ago. All it took was an invitation. Then something magical happened.
We started this 6 years ago. And at the same time we were starting it, I noticed this kid that lived across the street. Well, it turns out he was a big soccer star at Sequoia High School. And his name is Andy Rios. So it was summer and I saw him on the sidewalk. We got to talking. I said, "So what's up?" He said, "Well, I just graduated from high school." "That's great. What are you doing now?" "I'm going to Cal Poly." I said, "Jesus, Cal Poly, really?" So we announced this in the group. At the end of this thing, one of our other neighbors decided that he wanted to give Andy $100 just to kind of launch him in college, you know? So I announced this to the entire neighborhood, and people came up to my door and started giving me money. And one person came up with $300 bills. And by the time we were done, we had $1,150 to give to Andy as he took off for his school year. I mean, just amazing. You know, these people were so generous. Yeah, yay for Harrison Avenue, you know, generous. Yeah. And so, now what would that be like? I mean, I bet many of you in here went off to college like that when you're 18 or did something else, go to the Army or whatever. And imagine how terrified that was. You're away from your neighborhood, you're away from your parents, your friends from high school, and you're, am I going to be good enough? Am I going to flunk out? Am I okay? And imagine what it would be like. And now your entire neighborhood has like put their arms around you and giving you $1,150. So the last year we had it, last summer, he comes back, he's got his degree, and now he's an engineer working in Redwood City.
The other day I came across a quote that pretty much sums up what these groups mean to me. "I'd rather go to hell with my friends than to heaven alone." Guess who said that? Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormon Church. Of course, that church is famously about community. Thinking back to the studies I quoted at the beginning of this chapter from the CDC, we must have ways to get the elderly in our communities who are living alone into group activity, church group, bowling league, book club, whatever. It might just prolong their lives. Or my life, for that matter. Building community in families. Question: how can we build community within a family? Answer: active listening and an iPhone. The work I'm most pleased about over the past decade is my video work within families. As you can tell from the content of this book so far, I get huge satisfaction from getting people to tell their stories on video or audio. But when the skills of interviewing, video and editing focus on a person or on a family, whole new worlds open up. I'm concluding this chapter on community by sharing snippets from four of these family-focused stories. Number one, since I met Mary McGlynn in 1978, I've attended a number of her family's reunions. In recent years, these reunions have become hugely successful, drawing as many as 150 people for the weekend. 3 years ago, I produced a documentary about what people get out of these reunions. As I listened to the stories, it sounded to me like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, they kept saying what a great family they have and how much they love each other. And guess what?
They have a great family that loves each other.
It's just such a blessing. It's such a blessing to be a part of a large family that's all doing well, and the land itself is incredible. So it's I'm not a religious person, but it's such a blessing and almost a religious experience being back and with the family and on such a beautiful piece of land.
As the group of cousins has kind of aged a little bit into young adulthood and some started families of their own, it's really become pretty fun to hang out with everybody when we come up here. It's always nice to see everybody, see how the changes they've had in their lives, and you know, future family members, the cousins are having kids now left and right, it seems like, so that'll be fun as the years go by to keep track of all them.
I feel like really lucky that we have this close family, and I genuinely really like everyone in this family. Like, there's, you know, cousins are getting married, so now I have cousins-in-law that I also really like, and now they're having kids, and that's really fun, and that's awesome to see kind of the generations moving. So the people, number one, but the place has always felt really special. I mean, I remember so clearly being here with Grandma and Grandpa, and it was always a really loving place, and I feel like a responsibility for our history, knowing that's been in the family, you know, since the mid-1800s. But it feels very much a part of my DNA, the place, and then the people that have all been connected to it. Try to remember the common goal of loving each other.
After I presented the video to all of Mary's siblings, one shot back a note saying, "Thank you so much, Rick. This elevates you to the high status of the most favored in-law, at least for a while." Number 2, Tim McGlynn. In 2019, one of Mary's cousins, Tim McGlynn, was deathly ill. His wife, Char McGlynn, asked if I would stop by after the reunion and make a video of Tim and his closest brother, Tad, so the family could share a record of Tim's life long after he was gone. I was honored. I recorded these two brothers in Tim and Char's front room for about an hour. The brothers play off of each other with humor, memories, and deep love. They talked about how much family means to them, including grandchildren. Tad recalled that when a new baby was born into the family, the mother turned to him saying, "I just hope he grows up to be just like you." Tad dissolved into tears.
She said, "I don't really know who he really looks like, but," she said, "I hope he grows up to be just like you." And that was the most special thing that anybody ever told me. I just want to be remembered that people thought I was a good person, good husband, good father, good brother, good neighbor, whatever. Other than that, I don't think there's a hell of a lot that's very important.
Okay, Brian's got three little girls, cuter than buttons. And the youngest, the oldest one's 12, 13 now. She's a little bit big to be giving grandpa kisses, but them smaller two, holy shit. I get more kisses out of them and hugs than anybody else in the world.
We never like bullshit. Things are the way they are. And people go out of their way to complicate things that just don't need complicated. Period.
So what you see is what you get.
Yeah. You know, an ace is an ace, and a spade is a spade. and that young nun told the old nun in front of them construction workers out there, they were cussing and swearing, and the old nun said, "Just don't worry about it." She said, "They're hardworking men. They call an ace, a spade a spade." The young nun said, "No, they don't. They call it a fucking shovel."
All right, gentlemen, I think we're done.
You think we did okay, do you?
I think you guys did great, just great.
After I sent the edited video to Char McGlynn, she wrote me this wonderful letter. "Dear Rick, words cannot express the thanks I have for the beautiful video you made of Tim and Tad. It is a keepsake for our family that we will always cherish. You were able to capture the deepest feelings of these men, a side of their personalities they seldom share. Gratefully yours, Char. Number 3. Laura During. On June 11, 2017, Vivian During put on a special birthday celebration for her 93-year-old mother, Laura. Laura was close to death's door. Her doctors said she just had a few months to live. Vivian thought it would mean the world to Laura for people to come by and share their love and their tearful goodbyes. I volunteered to video the event. 23 people spoke on camera to Laura, some one-on-one, some in groups. Many recalled former good times, going back as far as 70 years. The family has German-Jewish roots and lost many family members in the Holocaust. One person talks about how Laura's family sponsored her family to come here. Another says in passing that her wedding at Laura's house was very small because, quote, "we didn't have a big family anymore, of course." Some were in full denial. "You're looking great. Hang in there. See you again soon." Others cried and acknowledged their coming loss of a person they loved so much. There were lots of stories about Laura's giving nature and how people felt so supported by her over the years. Some even said, "You were like a second mother to me." The final sequence of this event involves Laura's love of her son-in-law, Tom Curran. In the private recording of Tom, he was one of the few who could acknowledge his coming loss. So I concluded this segment with his comment, "I'm going to miss you."
Vivian here. Today is Sunday, June 11th, 2017, and we're here at my home in San Carlos, California, about to celebrate my beautiful mother, Laura, 93 years young.
You're lucky and you raised her right. And you know what else I wanted to tell you is that you are just so classy and elegant.
Thank you.
You are. Thank you for being there in my life. I love you.
My pleasure.
Knowing my history, you know it, and you know what I grew up with and my mom and her history and how damaged she was. And I wanted to let you know that you were the buffer for me. And you supplied the comfort that I didn't get at home. And I just wanted you to know I appreciate that. I want to thank you and Uncle Rudy for sponsoring us so that we could come to this country and be here, and I'll never forget it. And I appreciate you so much. I love you.
You always just seemed so incredibly loving and sweet and understanding. And that is quite, those are some incredible virtues. And I just wanted to let you know that that's not, didn't go unnoticed with me. And I want to thank you for setting that example for me as well.
Buddy, you're doing fine. You're looking good.
So far, I'm not complaining. And I'm very happy to see all my old friends.
Yes.
Hi, Laura. I'm always so happy to see you. You always look so beautiful and put together. And I always wonder what your secret is to such a long, wonderful life. Love the fact that you always have your hair done, your makeup, your nails done. And I sure hope that one day when I'm 93, I'm going to look like you.
Laura was already very good to me before I even met her, because I lived in Europe and survived the war. And she and Rudy sent me and my sister care packages. Very nice. So we corresponded, and she and Rudy gave me an affidavit so that I could come over.
Laura probably changed my diapers, to be honest with you. And actually growing up with Laura and Rudy and my mom and dad together, looking at Laura, it's almost like having a second mom.
Hi, Laura. You're like a second mama. And when I think of my own mother, I think of kindness. And when I think of you, I think of kindness.
And by the way, not by the way, I have a wonderful son-in-law. Tom has been great through all my problems every day and can't thank him enough. Whenever something goes wrong, we gotta call Tom.
Hi, Mom. I love you. You're so generous and loving, and it's been such a joy to have you in my life.
What is she giving you that you'll take away for the rest of your life?
Oh, the love, the affection, the generosity. There's so much to be said about you, Mom. You know, I love you deeply. You've always been there for me, and I hope you know that I've been there for you. And I'm going to miss you.
After I sent the edited video to Vivian, she wrote me this note. This video is a beautiful tribute to Mom. It enables our family and close friends to celebrate her in person, share our love, our happiest memories, and her importance to each of us. I cherish the memory of that day and will watch the video often. Number 4, David Stewart. David Stewart was several years ahead of me growing up in Berkeley. I didn't know him personally, but I knew of him. We went to the same schools and were in the same Boy Scout troop. Some time ago, David had a debilitating stroke. The family decided to move him up to Vancouver Island, Canada, where his children live and where long-term care is less expensive. It was a tough decision for David and his longtime life partner, Emily Benner, but made sense economically. Someone suggested that we should make a video for David from his friends in Berkeley. The following snippets reflect aspects of David's life, starting with some songs from his Boy Scout days, my rendition of our Hillside theme song, and his friends' recollections of knowing David over the years. As you can hear, some of these interviews were recorded at a Christmas party.
Oh, the camp-coated bunch is the truest and the best. And they keep things going and they never take a rest. And they have one yell and they yell it all together. And it goes just like this.
And Dave took up the bagpipe because he wanted to learn how to play an instrument. And then the next thing I knew, half his goddamn scout patrol was playing the bagpipes. And they brought it up to Desolation Valley one time. And I thought, oh, this is ridiculous. But then they would sit around and the campfire and play the bagpipes.
Cigarettes and whiskey and wild, wild women. They'll drive you crazy, they'll drive me insane.
Our school stands on the hillside neath the ever-towering trees. Before us and the Golden Gate and ever-rolling seas. Bathed in dazzling sunlight or in fog so silvery, we'll always honor you.
David, we miss you on Tamil Pious. We miss you with in the tennis court garden and with the chickens. And I just miss having you around. It was really fun to talk with you and visit with you. So hope to come visit you someday soon.
David, in my life, spoke directly to a spiritual thing. He had deep feelings for the Greek church. And so when I'm singing carols here tonight, you know, it brings up all the sort of archetypes of the Christian religion and how beautiful they are and how universal they are. And I thought of David.
Well, I miss him a lot, all the time. He's always got a kind thing to say and a million jokes. For me personally, David was somebody who wasn't scared of emotion, and he would talk to me about real things. And David talked to me about you know, like love and relationships and heartache and challenges. And
when I think of David, I think of the sparkle in his eye. When I used to see him in the garden, always a sparkle in the eye and give me a kiss on the cheek.
David, we miss you. We love you.
all those years were amazing. We're so grateful to you for having shared your house and your home and your heart.
We did so many interesting things together, climbing in the mountains and skiing and meeting up in Europe. And I really miss you. So, thinking about you.
It's so easy for you to win people over, for you to just become instant friends with them. And that's something that I want to become better at.
Happy New Year, and I hope that you are having a very happy time with your children. Because we miss you, all of us in Berkeley.
We miss you, we love you. We all said that in the group.
We miss you and love you, David!
A few weeks after I sent Emily Benner the edited video, she took it to Canada to show David. Then she wrote me this note. I'm in Canada. David's son picked me up at the float plane terminal. We came immediately to David's room and watched the video. David was glued to the screen, chanting along with some of the Troop 23 cheers and songs. I forwarded the video to his and my family. My Parisian cousin wrote back very quickly with praise and many questions about the cast. I particularly want David's children and grandchildren to see how much loved and valued their pops and grandpops is. Thank you again and again for this gift. What touched me most about Emily's letter was how this energetic man, now on his deathbed, with just a few months left of life, sang along to the old Boy Scout songs. Deep and precious memories from 70 years ago now came bubbling up to the surface. Where do these memories live? I don't know. But I do know the deep satisfaction I felt in being able to help a dying man recall joyful experiences from some of the happiest times of his long and eventful life. Of these four stories, three of the main characters have died: Tim McGlynn, Laura During, and Dave Stewart. When I think what these videos will mean to their families, maybe for generations to come, I feel such satisfaction. With today's technology so easy to use and economical, anyone can make these videos that will be cherished for future generations. All you need is a smartphone, a cheap tripod, a quiet room, and natural light. Also some good questions, especially helpful active listening. Take a shot. The families will love you for it. Who knows? You might even be elevated to the status of favorite in-law. With age comes the ability to be astounded by people and events around me. These days, I'm not so self-focused, and what do you know? I see inspirational people all around me. So I want to tell you about all of this in Chapter 18.